excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
If we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving. Keep turning our way, and our way
is on the road again. Welcome to this UCLA edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford reporting to you on the road home from the UCLA game on October 25th. This Cal team, like no other that I've watched, seems to have a Jekyll and Hyde personality where sometimes it plays really, really well and other times it plays remarkably poorly. And nowhere was that more evident than in today's game where there would be flashes of brilliance and also moments that the incompetence of the team was distressing. In the end, of course, the final score of 41-20 is fairly satisfying. A 3-touchdown victory over a reasonable Pac-10 team is never something to overlook. And the quality of the UCLA defense as well should not be overlooked. They're a pretty good defense. They've held a lot of teams to reasonable totals, even when their offense hasn't been producing. And so when in the first half they were able to stifle the Cal offense a bit more than I think all of us were comfortable with, to some degree that has to do with their defense. Now, of course, there were plenty of things going on that were more than that. The penalties at times were a bit troublesome and things like that. But then when you look at the second half and how the offense performed in the second half, there's a lot of reasons to be really optimistic. And if they can play like that, I think they can beat a team like Oregon next week. What I find particularly encouraging about the second half was the diversity of the play calling, the reverses, the flea flicker, a lot of very creative play calling that you haven't seen out of Tedford and staff for quite a while. There were some moments of it in the Arizona State game, but overall, it really has been since the early Tedford years since the play calling has had the kind of diversity it had in the second half today. Minus a couple series where the inability of the defense to stop third and long, the defense actually played really, really well. They gave up 6 points and 1 touchdown at the very end of the game on an extremely short field. I mean, the run back got the ball down to first and goal. So, of the 20 points, 7 of it came from a first and goal off a long kickoff return, 7 of it came directly off of special teams in the blocked punt, leaving only 6 really on the defense's back, and that is also very good. They always stiffened in the red zone. There were some holes in the zone that UCLA was able to expose on third and long, but I think with some time in the film room, they'll be able to adjust to that. And I saw overall good things of how they were lining up their formations and who they were having on the field, and they were doing a lot more creative things with the outside linebackers than I saw last week. So really, in a large sense, this win belongs on the defense's back as much as last week's loss belongs on their back as well. Because let's be honest, in the first half with the way the offense was struggling, if the defense had given up 21 points, so you had something like a 28-17 halftime score, it's a whole different ball game and the confidence levels are on the other side of the field and everything like that. So really, there's a lot to feel good about on the defensive side of the ball after a game like this. Going back to the offense, of course, the merry-go-round continues at the quarterback position with Riley playing. I hadn't really talked to the coaching staff or the players since Tuesday, and at that time it was completely up in the air, so I had no idea who was going to start today. And I don't know if Tedford had tipped his hat before today on who was going to start. I was pretty confident it was going to be Riley when I watched warm-ups and he was getting the first-team reps. But I was surprised by that move, to be quite honest. I don't know if Riley had a very good practice through the second half of the week, or if then they looked at film, they saw things they liked with how he was playing. And after his performance today, I mean, anybody's guess is as good as mine, but I would have to believe he's going to keep his job unless he were to really get bogged down and really continue to have weak first halves. And it's hard to tell. Is it a case of, you know, he's just getting into the rhythm of the season, and with a few more weeks, the first halves wouldn't be a problem? Or is it a case where he's just a slow-starting guy? Because we have seen this in just about every game where his first half isn't as good as his second half. And to be honest, the more I watch both Longshore and Riley play, it almost feels to me like Longshore should play the first half and Riley should play the second, because they seem to be on crossing curves. Now, of course, the big thing that doesn't work there is perhaps the reason Riley is finally getting good in the second half is because he's had a half to warm up. So putting him in the second half would only mean his first half starts in the second half, which wouldn't do anybody any good. But I think as he grows and matures, you know, those learnings that he's getting during the game that help him improve are going to make a difference, and he's going to start faster and faster. Now, as for the reason he started, my gut feel is, I know Tedford was very concerned about the defensive tackles of UCLA. And sure enough, there were more sacks today against Cal than in about any game I can remember. And a lot of that had to do with the fact of the pressure that was coming up the middle. And the offensive line did acceptably against that pressure. Not great, acceptably. But I can see where Tedford would say, all right, I'm expecting a lot of pressure up the middle. I know that Riley is my more mobile quarterback, and he's the better one to start in a game like this, all other things being equal. And in the end, I mean, particularly when you include his second half, he did really well. And the mistakes in the first half, I don't think were really him as much as, again, receiver dropping balls. There were two shots at the slant into the end zone that were both dropped, and both of those balls needed to be caught. Those were not horrible throws. They were pretty darn good throws on a not too poorly covered receiver, and they were in the bread baskets well off the ground. So you need to pull that ball in and catch it. And it did feel like Riley's touch was getting better as the game went on. I mean, he barely missed Tucker on that fade down the sideline in the fourth quarter, and his ball to Boateng for the touchdown, although a bit underthrown, he was under pressure and he launched the ball down there to get it done. So he may be the quarterback that helps us stretch the field. I mean, it's really hard to tell. There's been so many instances where both Riley and Longshore have had, you know, good moments, and trying to project that onto how they're going to do in the future has proved far more elusive than anyone would like to admit, and I think is part of the reason that Tedford continues to be tortured as to who to pick. Other aspects of the game that were notable, the first is that the running game really did well in the third and fourth quarter, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were mixing it up. They're going outside and inside and reverses and flea flickers and passing when they thought we were going to run, and a lot of things that could keep a defense honest and keep them on their toes. And that's the type of thing that opens up the run game. So I was very glad to see that diverse play calling. And as a result, we saw really good running out of both Best and Vereen. Best seems to be getting better at making a couple yards after contact. That's one thing I really like about Vereen is, you know, he can get hit at the line of scrimmage, and he's much more likely to end up with a 3-yard gain than Best, at least traditionally. Whereas today I saw Best really muscling his way for that couple extra yards and doing a good job. So I think Best is improving in that regard, and of course he's still got that cut ability and that blazing speed that really puts him over the top and makes him the reason that he starts over Vereen in the first place. So if he can pick up that tackle breaking, or at least, you know, tackle deferring where he gets those 2 yards that he shouldn't have got skills, I really think that he's going to be an excellent back moving forward. And that made a huge difference at the end of the game. The Bears were really able to grind out the clock and do things like stick it to Neuheisel when he's taking timeouts when the game is clearly over. Special teams were a weakness today, and that's rare for the first time all season, Anger was out-punted by his opponent. Punter, who you got to have a lot of respect for. He boomed the ball and boomed it consistently, and he had a much quicker release than Anger, which was part of the reason that punt was blocked. He could have gotten that ball off if he had just kicked a bit faster. And in my interview with him on Tuesday, he noted that he doesn't look at all at the players coming at him, and that's probably the right decision, but I can also see how that's the reason why he doesn't get the ball off any faster than he otherwise would when the heat's coming. But really, I mean, in the end, it's the line's job to make sure that nobody gets to him if he kicks it in a reasonable period of time, which he did. He could have kicked it fast and gotten it off, but he did a normal amount of time. He wasn't excessively holding on to it. So that was a real big hurt for the special teams. Also, although it didn't end up hurting the Bears, that case of the fake punt by UCLA, where they almost got a first down because nobody was covering their gunner, was a huge mistake. I don't care that it's 3rd and 24, whatever it was. You got to have a guy at least close to him that they can't throw a ball that has a hope of getting a first down. And the only reason it didn't is the ball wasn't thrown as well as it could have been. And actually, it credit to Conti. He got over there really fast and made that tackle. So it worked out for the Bears, and they actually got the ball in a better spot than they would otherwise. But they were clearly playing with fire and got lucky. On the positive side, Tavecchio continues to kick the ball really well. Yeah, he's not a get-it-into-the-end-zone guy yet, although I would not be surprised to see him be that kind of guy in a season or two. Remember, this kid's a freshman. But he's kicking great field goals. That 42-yarder was as clean as could be, and is consistently getting the ball down to the 5-yard line on the kickoffs with a fair amount of hang time. So can't argue with that part of the special teams. It was really on punting that the team struggled. And then also that really big run back that they let UCLA have that got the ball down to the 5-yard line at the end of the game. That's a case not so much of bad coverage as the team letting up at the end when they shouldn't have. I mean, the game was over and everyone knew it, and they just didn't play hard like they needed to. But still, nevertheless, if you look at the big mistakes of the game, the things that really kept it at all reasonably close, they were all on the special teams' back. And then there were a couple other mistakes that, though they didn't kill the Bears, are really troublesome if the trend continues. Although I think actually that situation will be just enough for the Bears to never pull that stunt again. Overall, no one should ever complain about a 41-20 win over UCLA. They are not the best team in the Pac-10, but they're also not the worst. And putting up those kind of points is something to be proud of. And finishing that strongly is something to be proud of, particularly after the team has struggled putting up second-half points in the last few games. Looking ahead, as I said at the beginning, I think the team that played in the second half can beat Oregon. And I think the 3-4, when they play it right, is very strong against the read option play that Oregon loves to run so much and is the bread and butter of their offense, and their spread offense, because it allows them to keep 4 linebackers on the field while still protecting the run really well. So I think the Bears are capable of winning next week, but they really need for their A team to show up, and to show up for all 4 quarters. Doing what they did this week of only showing up in the second half is not going to get it done against a team like Oregon, which is pretty darn consistent and is getting better every week. So they're really going to have to come to play next week. I suspect Riley's going to get the start again, and he's just going to be asked to start him a bit more quickly. That means the wide receivers are going to have to hold on to the ball in the beginning of the game. The little mistakes that the defense has been making in the first half are going to have to get cleaned up, and they're going to have to play a pretty complete game for 4 quarters. That wraps up this edition of the On the Road Home podcast. Look forward to my BearTerritory.net podcast on Tuesday with coach and player interview quotes from the Tuesday press conference. And then, of course, this podcast after next week's game. Jason and Phil and I have been hoping to get back on track with doing the midweek, excuse me for my voice, podcast, but between traveling commitments and stuff like that, those haven't been happening. So hopefully we'll be able to pick those up this week as well. So look for those, and thank you for listening. On the road again.